Welcome to KPFK 90.7 FM and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Tammy Bang Liu, and I'm here with my co-host Damon Azali. This is the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. Today we have Ron Daniels, the Executive Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, to talk with us about the black vote in relationship to the 2004 presidential elections, and in particular the upcoming South Carolina primary. Next, we'll have Graham Boyd, who will talk about the drug war as the new Jim Crow and his call for a new civil rights movement to address the growing U.S. apartheid. Following that is New Jersey. We'll have Ron Washington from the Black Telephone Workers for Justice talking about their four-year struggle to get Verizon Communications to recognize Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and make it a paid holiday.
Hello, this is Damon Azali, and first we're going to have Ron Daniels on the phone. As we move further down the path to the November presidential elections, many progressives and leftists have been thinking about how to harness the power of the black vote. It seems that there are many issues that affect the black community that don't even show up on the radar in much of the campaigning in both the Democratic and the Republican sides of the debate. Today's guest, Ron Daniels, has done a lot of thinking about this issue. He's the executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. He was a deputy campaign manager for Jesse Jackson's 1988 bid for presidency. Ron Daniels actually himself also ran in 1992 for the presidential election, and he played a leading role in the National African American Leadership Summit and the Million Man March. Ron Daniels, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great for you to be here. So I want to start off by reading a quote from a piece that you wrote back in November titled, "Sharpton Faces a Critical Test in South Carolina." And the quote goes like this: "The question is whether the Democratic Party can develop a program, platform, agenda, devise a strategy, and select a candidate who can galvanize a progressive coalition to oust the reactionaries from power. It is clear that this cannot be done without massive voter registration and turnout by the most loyal but oft the most neglected constituency in the Democratic Party, black voters. A big vote by blacks could be a decisive factor in the 2004 presidential and legislative elections, hence the importance of the candidacy of Reverend Al Sharpton, who's the president and CEO of the National Action Network." So for this, a couple things, questions pop onto mind just to start things off. First is, how do we get politicians to engage in issues that affect the black community? And then secondly, how do progressives move the black community to use their political power to shape the agenda of the two political parties that more clearly and more directly address the needs of the black community and the working class? So, Ron, why don't you start off by even jumping off on one of those, or you know, talk about maybe why the South Carolina primary is so important and where Reverend Sharpton fits into that.
Well, I think the key question that you raise is the question of the, it's a process, it's both a question of principle and process. And that is to say, it's important within the African-American community to have some vision of what it is that we see as being important in terms of a progressive black agenda. It is unfortunate that we've not had really in recent years the kind of sort of comprehensive agenda building processes that we had in the 70s with the Garrett Convention in 72 and then Little Rock, Cincinnati, and there were other meetings. There are a couple of meetings scheduled for later this spring, actually one in March in Boston, another one in April in Chicago, and I think even there's some talk about a hip-hop political action convention, but they are not likely to rise to the level or magnitude of the conventions that I'm referring to. Mm-hmm. In that regard, this is why having a progressive candidate like Jesse Jackson in 84 and 88 can be important, because in a situation where the various candidates will need to compete for a block of votes, a block of delegates, if Reverend Jackson was able to be reasonably successful in 84, much more successful in 88, the idea is to have them to have the different factions or different areas of the Democratic Party have to compete for that, for those black delegates. One of the things that's been missing in this equation has been the outside strategy. In other words, to be perfectly honest about it, if you run in the Democratic Party, if the Democrats feel that the that African Americans, Latinos, and others have nowhere to go, then they're not likely to be as responsive as they might be.
Right.
So actually what I had proposed this year was for a notable person like Reverend Sharpton, for example, maybe to run on the outside as an independent and have someone like a Maxine Waters or the now deceased Maynard Jackson run on the inside. And what happens in that situation is you make your demands, whether they're critical issues, some of which, by the way, affect everybody, question of health care, housing, and whatever, but there are some specifics. Question of the prison, jail, industrial complex and getting rid of mandatory sentencing, dealing with questions of urban policy, a domestic Marshall Plan, addressing more forthrightly questions of affirmative action, youth training programs for young people in the summertime, which affects both blacks and Latinos and even young whites for that matter. The question of an economic agenda, which talks about not only jobs but economic infrastructure. These are things that affect particularly, and the issue of reparations, these are things that affect particularly the African-American community. Well, these issues are not likely to be addressed if, in fact, there's a feeling that there's nowhere for you to go. So in an ideal scenario, you would have an outside strategy where there was a threat on the outside that if, in fact, the Democrats did not function appropriately, that people could abandon the Democratic Party. There is no such threat in this circumstance now. So the only thing we can hope for is that a Reverend Sharpton, if he breaks through in South Carolina, and he's now showing about 15% in the polls, coming in about a close third in the rankings. And if he's able to come through first, second, third would be okay, second would be better, then he'll start getting a lot more attention than he's getting now. Right now he's kind of seen as the one with the one-liners, he's quick on his feet, but kind of peripheral and whatever. But if he breaks through in South Carolina and then begins to galvanize a significant number of delegates, and by significant I mean 200-400 delegates, then all of a sudden in a race where you could have Kerry and Edwards being involved, I think Lieberman is not likely to make the cut ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But the military guy, the general, Wesley Clark, okay. Then all of a sudden the votes, those delegates, that 200 or 300 delegates become very important. And if there's an alliance.
That's how to leverage the power of a kind of a more progressive agenda.
Right, particularly if you then combine efforts with Kucinich. Now, as far as I'm concerned, Kucinich is clearly the most progressive candidate in the race in relationship to a comprehensively well-thought-out political platform. There's no question about that in my judgment. Kucinich will get less votes, it seems to me, than even Sharpton. But if he gets some, and Sharpton and Kucinich come together, and they've already done some cooperating, then the two of them can hopefully, leverage for a more progressive agenda. And what do we mean by that? We mean something. I mean, Dean is bringing, for example, a tremendous amount of excitement to the table with some of the younger voters. And now, he's being asked to sort of tone back his style a little bit. Well, you better have something on the table that attracts young people. Is that a question of universal, is that free education, as Kucinich is talking about, or some reasonable facsimile of that so that young people have a feeling that this country cares about them? What are going to be the issues that really attract and keep these young voters in line? They're not likely to be attracted by Bush Light and the person of Lieberman. This guy gets up and says, basically, I'm Bush, vote for me.
He says Lieberman, I remember the quote that Lieberman was saying, how that the Republicans aren't tough enough on national security and we need tougher national security. So I definitely hear you.
And let me just say that spinning it out in terms of some of the work that young people are working on and doing a brilliant job on, the whole question of NAFTA, GATT, globalization, WTO, International Monetary Fund, this matrix of issues relating to economic justice globally, somehow a Democratic candidate would have to speak to that, it seems to me, in very, very persuasive ways, that there's a sense that here's the candidates on our side in relationship to labor law internationally, a question of environmental law internationally, in clear terms, because there's got to be a trade-off, and that is if the candidate says he or she is for this agenda, then we've got to go to the polls, because we know that the other side will be galvanizing to turn out its vote, and its vote is one that is anti-environment, anti-women, anti-labor, anti-people of color. I mean, even though, unfortunately, you have a significant slice of labor that's cutting its own throat and supporting reactionary Republican candidates of the ilk and stripe of, you know, of Bush and Ashcroft and Condoleezza Rice and Powell and that whole cabal, if you will, if I can say that. So it's an intriguing year, and, you know, Sharpton could play an important role in it, but we certainly need something that, I mean, I think this is one of the most important elections in the last 100 years. We really do need a regime change. What we have, in my humble opinion, is a scenario where the war on terrorism has been used to frighten and to discipline people, the undermining of civil liberties with the USA Patriot Act, the whole war in Iraq, you know, another scenario where we've got to be frightened and worried. And then they've used that as a diversion, really, you know, to undercut social programs, to really impose a really reactionary kind of agenda. But people are in the name of patriotism. And so somehow or another, we've got to take that away from them. And I think there's a moment. There is a moment to do that now. But it will take broad participation of African-Americans, Latinos, Asians.
Well, I mean, Ron, I think I hear you saying, and you mentioned this a bit in the article that you that I quoted from earlier, is this kind of idea of having an independent political organization or coalition that from the outside pressures the Democrats to do the right thing. And I think one of those things, you know, since you had a lot of leadership involved in the Jackson campaign, I think that was one of the hopes coming out of that, to have a independent political organization, a progressive one, that can, like, last beyond the election and continue this.
There's no question that and of course, it's no secret, I've talked this over with Reverend Jackson. Many of us felt that the Jackson campaigns, the Rainbow Coalition, represented great strides for lost opportunity, because the Rainbow Coalition should have become a multiracial, but essentially one that came out of communities of color, solid base in the African-American community. I certainly worked hard to make sure that there was solid representation from Native Americans, indigenous people, from Latinos, Asians, and others, and, of course, various other constituencies. So, yes, this is the dream, is that at some point we should get back to the notion of an independent political organization, because now on the other side, as reactionary as the Republican Party is, it does not mean that every person in the Republican Party is reactionary. I can recall the days of, in the Civil Rights era, certainly people like Jacob Javits, Kenneth Keating, John Lindsay in New York. I mean, there have been liberals, there have been some moderates that offer some prospect of at least not being locked into the two-party monopoly. And then ultimately what we really need is that third, not only the third force, but we need healthy third, fourth, fifth parties. The Labor Party seems not to have taken off very well. The Greens are doing well, though I would hope in this particular election that they, you know, there's a discussion about fielding selectively candidates that could run in different places and whatever. What I would hope is that there'd be a major effort to say to the Democrats, if you don't want us to run, then we need some major concessions on some critical issues. And one of those issues is electoral reform. And, you know, the whole question of instant runoff voting, for example, would have made all the difference in the world. So you can't blame Nader for the defeat of the Democrats. I mean, it's the system that needed to have been changed, because if instant runoff voting had been a reform, had been instituted, and it were operable in Florida, then the second choice of most of the people who voted for Nader would have been Gore. So my position is pressure the Democrats, you know, to make them make some concessions, and in exchange for which then the Greens say, okay, well, in this really critical moment in history where we really don't have time, I think, I mean, I really am for independent politics. I'm for a third force. But I think at this critical moment, defeating George Bush is critically important, because you're talking about this conveyor belt of right-wing judges coming through, like a conveyor belt, coming through if, in fact, Bush is not defeated. And if not, there's no check in the Congress in relationship to either, particularly the Senate of the United States, where these judges can be held up, because then you'll have really three branches of government really controlled by the right wing.
Right.
The executive, the judicial, and the legislative branch, and the judicial branch will simply be rubber stamping the edicts of both, and it's like Plessy versus Ferguson all over again.
Right. Well, just do a little station identification. You're listening to Damon Azali. I'm the co-host of this program, and we're on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 89.7 in Santa Barbara, and we're speaking to Ron Daniels, the executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Ron, I have another kind of question, just kind of talking about the black vote. When we look around how things are districted in the South and in the black belt, we look at, you know, a lot of times you have the black people who are voting 98%, high 90s for Democrats. But they're also locked in these districts in which they're not even the majority. There may be 40% of the people who are actually in these districts. And it's almost as if the Democrats, and I think you've mentioned this earlier, it's almost as the Democrats kind of just assume that they're kind of already in their constituency. And one of the examples of this is when you were talking about the instant runoff voting, Hal Gore, in the 2000 election, he didn't even mention the fact that there were all these black folks who were pulled off the rolls and disenfranchised in Florida. So what are some of the ways that you've been thinking about, just with your experience, how we can actually get that vote and actually use it, you know, whether it's doing this third party group, or like, what are some of the ways that you're thinking about how we can harness this and actually push a little bit more?
Well, I think those are the things I've been talking about. First of all, you need visionary candidates, but we really need, and this is what's lacking, I think, in the African American community, but it's also lacking across the board in the political life of this country. Voting is equated with democracy rather than participation being equated with democracy. Participation is really the essence of democracy, not just voting. What we really need is a party of a new type. This is what I theorized about. This is what I had hoped to build out of the efforts that I've worked my independent presidential campaign in 92.
Right.
The whole notion of getting people to participate in both direct action campaigns, the whole question of organizing around issues, building institutions, whether they're economic institutions, educational institutions, cultural institutions, and engaging in the life of the community in terms of having some coming together of the neighbors, the community, the town hall meeting, if you will. It's like in Cuba, the Committees for the Defense of the Revolution.
Right.
That's more of what I'm looking for in terms of participation, having consultative processes where when public policy comes before a city council or whatever, it's not just assumed that because it's a representative democracy that you don't have some input. So in that sense, something as seemingly trite as meaningful citizens' participation in the poor as you had in the poverty program now sounds like a pretty good idea.
Hmm.
So I don't think we'll ever really get people, because the reality is the biggest political party in America today, as I've said for so many years, it's not the Democrats, it's not the Republicans, it's non-voters who are alienated, who are turned off. The other reality is you've got to get money out of politics. I mean, you've got to have publicly financed elections where people have a relatively equal footing, equal access to the media, so that ordinary people can run for political office, not just millionaires or people who have access to millionaires who have to spend all of their time on a campaign trail, at least not all of it, 60% of the time, begging the people who have money in order to finance their campaigns. Therefore, they're beholden to these interests. So we have a big challenge in order to make this democracy really a wholesome one. And so it's not just in 90 and 2000. People kept focusing on the machinery of the elections. I wanted to go beyond just the pregnant Chads and hanging Chads and all of that stuff to talk about really meaningful reforms to open up the process so that you'd have a much more vibrant democracy. And at the heart of that, it seems to me, is a party of a new type where you really do combine both the whole issues of organizing and protest with institutional community development as well as elections and lobbying. Now, that's not about to happen. It doesn't seem to be anytime soon. But that's the ideal. That's the vision that we have
that's
to work toward.
Right?
And it seems to me that one of the things I hope can happen, at least in the black community again, is at least these agenda conferences where people come together in communities and say, what is our agenda? What is it that we want? And then use that as a basis of supporting either Greens or Democrats or socialists or communists or Republicans or whoever the heck we want to support, but on the basis of an agenda that people have had some input into in terms of what are the real issues that affect people's lives. And that's what I think we could have done with the Rainbow Coalition. Alas, that is gone. We hope that Sharpton will pick up some of that. I don't see that as fully fleshed out as I would like in this campaign. But at this stage, hopefully we'll see some energy being at least attracted to the principal contradiction right now of taking out these dislodging this right-wing reactionary and frightening regime that's in power, so that on the other side we can resume our conversations about, you know, the other kinds of reforms and reconstructive transformative politics that we need to be about.
I have one kind of I have a couple more minutes left, but I wanted to run another question by you. A lot right now is we're talking about the swing states. You know, there's particularly in the Southwest, there's a whole bunch of states that, you know, 1 or 2 points went either way, Democratic or Republican, in the last election. And so there's this big focus on, in particular, the Latino vote. And I wanted to know what you thought about how some of these independents, you know, movements and actually, you know, the vision that you're talking about, how that can be also used in terms of the Latino vote. Because we've seen how George Bush with the guest worker program, et cetera, are trying to actually pull that vote toward the Republican Party. So can you speak?
Yeah, I mean, this is an issue I think that progressives need to sit down and talk about a great deal, because it is not automatic that many of the immigrant communities, and I'm certainly in favor of immigration, but quite frankly, very often the immigrant communities come in, some of the immigrant communities come in and are not really necessarily sensitive or drawn to a progressive agenda. And that is because, in relative terms, they are fleeing systems, some of them, that are far more repressive than what we have in this country. At least there is a Bill of Rights. There are some handles that we have in this country that we can struggle with. I think we've got to have meaningful dialogue between the most progressive elements of the broad, you know, people of color, whether it's Asian, Latino, whatever. We've got to have these conversations about how we approach our respective communities. That dialogue is not as intense as it ought to be, it seems to me now. We've got to reach out to the Latino community, the Asian community, and Native American communities, all of these communities of color, you know, to begin to talk about the South Asian Pacific communities. All of this has to be a part of our vision moving forward. Because otherwise, if we don't, if these communities decide to lodge themselves in the column of the right wing, then we have a much, much, much more difficult task at hand than we presently do. And certainly the challenges we have now are already very, very, very difficult.
Speaking of kind of the right wing, one thing that I read in an article that you wrote, I think it was in Vantage Point, we were looking at how Bush has this kind of new sense of, has brought forth this new sense of quote-unquote multiculturalism when they have folks like Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell as like the new face of U.S. imperialism, so it doesn't seem as kind of separated, you know, as far as black and white. And I feel a lot of times when we're looking, you know, when I'm organizing on the bus in the black community and whatnot, there's not a great sense of kind of class consciousness. It's very much about, well, there's representation, you know, and they'll look out for us, you know, we just need to get a black president, we just need to get a black congressperson and whatnot. And so I wanted to see, as far as any ideas that you had to actually, and we only have about one more minute, but any ideas you had to actually, what are some of the things, you know, through the grassroots organizing and whatnot, that we can actually flip this so that Black people don't only see the race piece, but also see class interest?
Well, that's across the board. I mean, what we now face is clearly to be able to say that it's not gender in and of itself, it's not sexual orientation in and of itself, it's not race, color, or ethnicity in and of itself. It is, in fact, the content of one's politics and one's vision that becomes important. And I think in the African American community, when you start comparing, if you compare, you know, a Thurgood Marshall with a Clarence Thomas, many African Americans get the point. And so it is incumbent upon African American progressives to have us move beyond skin color to understand the, you know, the substance and essence of what it is that we should be about. And of course that brings in a class dimension, but it also is a question of even what is the nature of what we want out of our African American, Latino women, lesbian and gay, transgender, bisexual, whatever. What is it that we want out of our respective politicians in a progressive movement? And it's not just gender. It's not just sexual orientation, because, you know, there's nothing inherent in that that does not mean that they cannot also be reactionary.
That's right.
And certainly a Congolese Rice, Clarence Thomas, the three C's as I call them, Clarence Colin and Congolese, point that out in a very, very sharp way. So this is a new contradiction. It's not a new contradiction, but it's certainly been brought into sharp relief. And many of us are very much on it in terms of, you know, challenging the whole, what I call, the fallacy of skin politics as we move forward in the 21st century.
Great. We had this. We were just speaking to Ron Daniels. Thank you so much, Ron. He's the executive director for the Center for Constitutional Rights. And we'll be back after a short break to speak with Graham Boyd about the drug war and the new Jim Crow.